You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
It's $20, and there's $4. And there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply. Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure clean, sustainable...
Solar panels more...
Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. All ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Cold River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Cold River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coldriverwind.com. Or call 304-854-2182. That's coldriverwind.org. 854-2182.
This is a talk to, we use on Spanish, but it's very special, because if you can see, the numbers will go to 11.
Things for our government domestically. The only country that doesn't have that is us. And we end up buying over half of our stuff from China. Tell me what sense that makes. And, you know, I look at these Buy American provisions, which I am strongly in favor of. And that cash for clunkers bill should have been, we'll give you this rebate if you buy an American fuel-efficient car. But it wasn't. So what did we do? We stimulated the Japanese economy. And I'm afraid we're going to be doing the same thing with this alternative energy push. We keep hearing about solar power, we keep hearing about wind power, and now we see this report down in Texas that a Chinese wind turbine company with financing from their government, their government's going to throw them a bunch of money. They've struck a deal in West Texas to sign to supply wind power in Texas, the largest wind farm.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
It's $20, and there's $4. And there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
24.95?
And don't you know that Boeing has, you know, has done some pretty underhanded things, and they've had some people going to go to jail for fraud. And yeah, I
some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
This is a top to you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, oh, 11,
and most of
11,
the amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is that any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show right here on the Horn. It's Foxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Foxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet. citynet.net. Be one louder by ringing 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366. Or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. Your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
Hey, everybody, welcome aboard. Oh, my God, and we've even got phones! No way! And if y'all are still hearing me sounding like I'm on Quaaludes, well, restart your player. We sorted that one out. Sorry about the false start there, folks, but, hey, you know, you sound like you're all screwed up and... Welcome aboard, everybody. It's a good day. I do believe. Listen to this. Yeah, that's me knocking wood, eh? We have phones. We have new software. It's been working. I've talked to Gene. I've talked to Bob. It's been awesome. And hopefully a little bit later I'll get to talk to you, but not quite yet. We're not going to open up the phones yet. We got a bunch of stuff to do today. Beginning of hour two, David from Maine will be stopping by, and we'll be beginning a new segment here on the Horn with David here on Foxed Up on the Horn with David every week. I believe it's some sort of mystery track thing. He is leaving me very much in the dark as it stands. So, but that's David for you. Pop culture correspondent extraordinaire. I'm going to talk about building with whole trees. This Gene sent me this a couple days ago. This is just some fascinating stuff. We'll go there. Talk a bit about the health care bill, and I'm going to come from good old Dennis Kucinich's angle because I think he kind of nails how I feel about the situation pretty well. And we got a bit of a business article on. What a carbon trading deal could cost. An example from a business site, which is good. I also, from last week's show, I was talking about the scientist on the drugs advisory board for the UK government who was basically shit canned for speaking some truth. And I never quite got to get to that audio last week. We got sidetracked with other things. Bob came on. We got talking about some other things. And but I am going to cover that audio today. If Bob's listening there, I see in the chat there. Never mind. I was in a bit of a thing with the streamer, but we got it sorted. It's all good, mate. But hey, this is this is how it is over here, you know. Host self-producing shows. Da-da-da-da. But I have to send out thanks to the many contributors over the last couple of weeks that have helped keep this network going. It's appreciated. I love this stuff where challenges are made and expectations exceeded. It's all good, but you know, it's a never ending battle to keep this network on the air. We may have some new listeners today via Facebook and some people that I've been reconnecting with. Any of my friends from old Chico City Light Opera days, welcome to the program. I hope you've had a chance to tune in. Because here in a little while, I'm going to take a little time out. You know, this network is a family. And I got to deal with something in a bit with part of my extended family of this life. I found out recently that a good friend of mine from my history passed away, and we're going to do a little bit of a playlist for her a little bit later in this hour. Once we get done with David and a few other things, we're just going to open up the phones because we haven't had the phones working properly for a couple of weeks. You know, the Skype thing was a pretty decent filler, but hey, It's not the same as y'all just being able to pick up a phone and go, ah! So. Anyway, yeah, I'm not sounding like Darth Vader Fox again. That was a bit weird last week, and I found out the problem. Yeah, it was a frame rate problem, except it was in a different spot than I thought. And what else do we have? Genos has sent me an interesting little piece, and it kind of confirms something that had been niggling in the back of my mind, that there's been a huge increase in the amount of electrical waste. Since the introduction of digital television, and we'll get there as well. So you can get in touch with me just like you do the normal way, John JON at headonradionetwork.com, or you can use my Gmail address, which is the number 12 thharmonic@gmail.com. The number to get into the program is 304-574-7811. Yes, we're back to 11. It's a good thing. Yeah, and as Tim from L.A. says, it's been not weeks, it's been months. Yeah, I know. And the mystery of the phones is not actually been solved, but we found a way around it. And if this continues to work the way that it looked this morning, I think I'm going to have to give a big plug to this software, phone, software. But anyway, where to start? Well, I think we should talk about these trees. Let's, you know, see, there's very likely some new listeners here that haven't tuned into the program or the network before, I'm hoping. And I figure I'll save the hardcore politics till a bit later because, you know, I don't want to go scaring some people off straight away. Just in case, you know, we don't see eye to eye on that, because I want you to hang around, because I'd like you to stick around for the playlist a little bit later. So I figured that no one can get cranky about. And you can, as normal, find links to all this stuff at foxdup.headonradionetwork.com. Gene's put the show post up there in the featured section. And there's a link to this story about building with whole trees. I would think he's also linked to the photo gallery, which is just outstanding. And at the top of this article, this gentleman by the name of Ronald Gunderson, atop a not very thick tree. That would be, just kind of looking at the guy. One, two, three, four, nine, nine. Oh, about 35 feet tall. Maybe not even 12 inches round. And he just walks up the side of it as it bends until the top touches the earth again. And this is obviously a bit of an example of what is the heart of this guy's architecture, which is building with complete trees and showing the strength that they have. And if you're in the chat room, Gene's posting the links right now. In there. And if you're not in the chat room, come on in, join the fun. headonradionetwork.com/chatroom. Quick sign up, jump in the pool. Love to see you in the chat. And because that's where you can kind of get the whole real time thing and backup links and all of that. Because we might have opinions here, but we do try to back them up with stuff. So, onto the trees. I was just really fascinated by this. And I'll just read from the beginning of, the article here. It says, is it Ronald or Rold? Oh, it's Rold. Pardon me, Mr. Gunderson. An architect who may revolutionize the building industry shined up a slender white ash near his house here on a recent afternoon, hoisting himself higher and higher until the timber trunk began to bend slowly towards the forest floor. Look at Papa, his life and business partner, Ms. Baxter, 31, called to their 3-year-old daughter, Estella, who was crouching in the leaves, reaching for a mushroom. Their son, Cameron, 9 months, was nestled in a sling across Ms. Baxter's chest. The ash, no more than 5 inches thick, was still bent towards the ground, Mr. Gunderson, was there. Still bent towards the ground. Stop. Mr. Gunderson will continue to work on it, bending and pruning it over the next few years in the forest, which lies about 10 miles east of the Mississippi River and 150 miles northwest of Madison. Loggers pass over such trees because they are too small to mill, but this Forester architect who founded Gunderson Design in 1991 and built his first house here 2 years later has made a career of working with them. Curves are stronger than straight lines, he explained. A single arch supporting a roof can literally brace the building in all directions. And one of the, it's right here. The firm recently renamed Whole Tree Architecture and Construction is also owned by Ms. Baxter, a one-time urban farmer and community organizer with a knack for administration fundraising. Now, there have been some tests done, and this is one of those no-duh situations. A single tree like this, one that wouldn't be logged, can hold 150% of the weight of the best piece of milled timber from the same tree. Following me here? By using the whole tree, it is stronger than any single piece of wood that could have been milled from that tree. Yeah, Tim, the no shit Sherlock moment. And you know, it's one of these. We've had these in the environmental movement, especially in recent years, you know, where people come up with simple things, you know, solar geothermal, the my favorite baseload power generation form, you know, same idea. But you go and have a look at what this guy's built, and the house is just outstanding. I mean, the trees in their natural form, all skinned and perfectly cleaned, come up through the floors to then support the roof, and it's like the ultimate treehouse. Ha ha ha! Excuse the pun, but that's what it is. It's the ultimate treehouse. And this ends up winning in so many ways. One, anything where we're not clearing old-growth forests, brilliant. Anything where we're not using, you know, you think about the carbon output that would be released by creating the steel that these trees would support in a steel-framed house. You look at the carbon that would be released and other things in needing to ship timber around the country. You know, it's one of these less is more concepts. And I just don't see how it you can find a negative to the idea. So, you know, I'm not going to sit here and read the entire article, but I really recommend that you all check out the story. Check out the photos. I mean, if you can look at those photos and not say, yeah, I could live in a house like that, something is wrong with you. and you know, they've got a beautiful greenhouse and all that kind of stuff going on. I mean, it's just amazing. But this is thinking, you know, to use a cliche, thinking outside the square. And it's some brilliant, 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 brilliant stuff. Like I said, it's just absolutely beautiful. I'm just going to have a quick scan and see if there's any other major high points I've missed. But just to reinforce what I said, Gunderson says, in architecture, how materials come together and how they are connected is really the God in the details. He continued, connection is where things will fall apart. He said, adding that the crook of a tree has been time-tested by environmental conditions for 200 million years. He refers to that first house, which cost $15,000 for plumbing, electrical, septic, and other basic amenities, as well as $4,000 in paid labor and a year of his own labor and his master's degree in architecture. So, you know, again, you know, this looks like it could have another benefit of being, well, affordable housing. Affordable, sustainable housing. Now, there's a concept I can get down and dirty with. So, check it out. New York Times. Brilliant, brilliant thing. And if you need to search it up, just search up Building with Whole Trees. I recommend it highly. So what we're going to do here is we're going to take a little break. And then we're going to come back and I'm going to say farewell to a friend. I hope you all will give me this indulgence, because my regular listeners, you guys are all my extended family. And this is someone who has been out of sight but never far out of mind. And we'll come back to that in just a little while. So in the meantime, oh, bring it on, Van Halen. You're listening to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. Stick around. We'll be back after this.
A bit of the old Halen.
All right, you sinners.
You want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
And alcohol. Everybody loves it, and so do I. And President George W. Bush will party tonight. Damn the consequences. Another shot. The sky's the limit. We resolve to party all the way to God.
Some things just never get old, do they?
you got to love the chat room. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. Time to take care of some somewhat serious business. Serious business for me, personally. Now, as you all know, and I think Gene's still getting over the fact that I've actually joined Facebook. When I first told him I had a Facebook page, the first response was, so when the hell did hell freeze over? I've taken the dive. And, you know, there's pitfalls to this thing. I've already gotten into a big spat on someone's page about healthcare and immigrants and some other stuff, and it got all ugly. But there are other, you know, I started going around and reconnecting with people that I haven't talked to in ages. And you know, people who have been listening to this program for a long time know that I have a real special place in my heart for Chico, California. I spent a lot of really, really fun and creative years there with a musical theater company. And I'm kind of doing a bit of that tragic going through memory lane on other people's pages, checking out, you know, images from shows we did and things like that. And kept coming across the occasional photo of a particular person, and there were comments on there about people missing her, and, you know, I suddenly got that horrible, horrible feeling that I had missed something. Well, I had just missed something. And real quick to answer James B's question, just search up John Fox on Facebook, and you should be able to find me in Australia. Woi woi, Australia. So, anyway. So, using the power of Google, I start searching around, and I finally come up with, after about 20 minutes, an article informing me that someone who is pretty damn special had passed away in 2005, Lydia Taylor Mora. And she was a choreographer, dancer, actress, and just a power unto herself. There are times in one's life where you meet someone who is their just own source of energy, and their passion and their desire to entertain. I mean, that's incredibly important to me, is people's passion. Just kind of outshines everything. And on top of that, for a while living in Chico, I shared a house with, check this, the production stage manager, the head choreographer, the lighting designer, and myself, the sound designer for this theater company. And so our house was nothing but a 24/7 production meeting, and we loved every minute of it. And I think it's one of the things that led to us putting on some really great shows together. I was lucky to be a part of it. And Lydia was one of those people that just lit up the room. And I have to say, I was just completely crushed when I had heard the news. I mean, she had a heart condition. Everyone always thought that that might be the thing. But she was a dancer, and that seemed to combat it. But then, you know, you just never know what the hell is going to happen, and you just don't know what to say. But, you know, bloody cancer. Fucking cancer. But, so, you know, it's way late. I'm way behind the eight ball on this. So I felt that the best thing I can do is to just play some music in her honor. Now, most of this won't necessarily be stuff that she would have picked herself. This is stuff that means this is totally about me. but this is, I got a few tunes to just kind of say goodbye, really. And I'm lucky for being the one to have known you. And for Danielle, Alex, who I shared that house with, I have some of the best memories I've ever had in my life. And part of me is hurts that I wasn't around for all this, but no, Sparky, it's not the Chico Theater Company. The company we worked for is no longer in existence. It was called Chico City Light Opera. And although we never really did much opera, we did a lot of musical theater and had a really, really good time doing lots of things. So I'm going to open up the playlist with first, on this network, those of you that might be new to the network, and this program, whenever someone important is lost, whether it's someone known personally, a musician, an artist, a politician, but someone who has touched you or touched me, this has become my dirge, per se. And so we'll start with what is the tradition on this program, which is Say Hello to Heaven from Temple of the Dog. And my old housemates might remember this record, because I think I was obsessed with this record, and it was new about at that time. And after that, something from Tommy, which is one of the shows that we did together. After that, I've got Emmylou Harris and Linda Ronstadt with For a Dancer. And so I'll run those three first. And I'll come back and explain a little bit about the rest of the playlist. So I appreciate you all indulging me in this. And my regular listeners, you have no idea who this person was, but she's pretty special. And she's missed. For you, Lydia.
Tommy.
bit of Emmy Lou, the goddess, and Linda Ronstadt off the, I believe that's off the Tucson Sessions or something like that. Before I move on, the day after I found out the news about, you know, this is one of the horrible things about distance sometimes, and where you lose track of people. And I was heading into Sydney for a meeting with the guys from, or the folks, because it's not all guys, from Swivelhead. And we were having a dinner meeting in the city, and I interrupted the meeting and kind of asked them, explained the story, raised a toast to Lydia and said farewell there. I just couldn't let the day go by. I think it was the day that I found out, actually. But on the way into the city, I was listening to my current obsession, which is that new Alice in Chains record. And the title track came on. I haven't played this on air yet. This is Jerry's song for Lane. And Elton John on piano. And I really struggled, you know, and I really struggled to just kind of not have tears going down my face as I was watching the scenery go by. And, you know, it's that thing of, well, shit, I didn't know. And I think that this may end up having to go into the mix with the Temple of the Dog track as a song for marking the passing of someone. Because this one, I think that this suits Lane Staley's life, and it sure as hell suits Lydia's life. The song is beautiful and just way too short. It leaves you wanting more. So, without any more delay, the title track off Black Gives Way to Blue, and then we'll come back and lighten it all up again and kind of have a dance party to finish this thing up. So, here's the last bit of the downers, but it applies to me, and the chorus, I'll Remember You. All right, now enough of that crap, because if Lydia heard this, she'd be really upset with me. And I could just hear what her response would be. And I'm going to finish it out with a couple of Rocky Horror tracks, because towards the end, one of the last things she was doing was starring in the European touring production of Rocky Horror. And one of the first shows, the first show that I did here in Australia was the Australian version of Rocky Horror. I think we may have even been doing the show kind of at parallel times. I would have loved to have done this show with her. So we'll do a little bit of science fiction double feature and Time Warp, and I know our chat room will love that. But before that, I know what Lydia would say if she had heard me doing this. She'd just say, you know what? Shut up and dance!
the day the earth stood still, but he told us where we stand. And Flash Gordon was there in silver underwear. Claude Rains was the invisible man. Then something went wrong for Fay Wray and King Kong. They got caught in a cellular jam. Then at a deadly pace, it came from outer space. And this is how the message ran.
Save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Hello, Cleveland! Hello, Cleveland!
It's hour two, getting all foxed up. And now, back to John on the Head On Radio Network.
Nobody knows you. Nobody even knows your name.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Foxed Up. We're starting hour two a little bit late, but see, that's the things you can do when you're not stuck to affiliates and all that stuff and the beauty of what we do here on the interwebs. So it's about 6 minutes past the hour, wherever the hell you are on this beautiful blue marble, such as it still is, and we should be getting a call here very shortly from our good friend David from Maine, as we're going to launch a new segment, and here we go. Let's see. Mr. David, do we have you?
Yes.
Oh, I love it. It's a beautiful thing. How you going, mate?
I'm doing all right, man. Doing all right.
We have phones.
Yes, and does it work all right?
Oh, yeah, it's crystal clear. It's been better than the old application so far. Knock wood.
No delay, no chopped and screwed effect?
No, it seems like after the first couple of calls, we'll get a little bit more view in there for everybody else. But, you know, it seems to be doing rather well. First call, you know, did that little finding ourselves and tidying up, and since then it's been really, really good. It's a thing called Express Call, Business Edition.
Ah. Well, that's good to hear. Are we on the air now?
Yeah, you're on the air, man. I can't mess
all
around.
Right.
You think I can call screen?
No, I thought it could have been the break.
No. We're already right back into it. So, we've been talking about this new segment, and so what's the go here? Explain it to everybody.
Well, this is a track I picked after several selections that I had in mind. I think this track came along too because of a discussion I was having with Bob, because he had not downloaded an album that I sent to him a while back, and I specifically stressed that he must listen to this artist. But I guess he hasn't, so now I have to force him to listen to it.
He's packing for his trip, listening to the show, so he'll get it now.
So without any further ado, I guess I'll just introduce the track. This is Lewis Taylor, Lucky, off the first album, and then we'll talk a little bit about the recording and process and why this artist is so special to me.
Okay, well, here we go. Here we go with Lucky. What's his name again?
Lewis Taylor.
All right, without further ado, Lewis Taylor and Lucky. very cool, David. I like the guy's vocals. And it sounded like a bit Massive Attack-y at the very beginning, but then, boy, it just shifted from there.
Yeah, Lewis Taylor is a cult legend, I guess you could say, from England. And if some people were wondering where the reference points were, well, obviously, the indelible vocal print is obviously Marvin Gaye, with especially the harmonies. And the fact that he did that, ow, you know, and that who?
And there's the clavichord as the outro comes in. That was just completely coming from there.
Right. So, you know, that was the reference point. So, Lewis Taylor was a guy in the late 80s who made a couple albums, and he toured with an actual prog art rock band in the late late 80s, and when he was a young guy. And then in the late 80s, he released some new wave albums that went nowhere. And then all of a sudden, after through a heroin addiction and massive psychedelics and a bad relationship, he started making this music like this. And what happened was he just made some demos, and Island Records flipped over it, and they said, you don't even have to touch these demos. So what you heard, John, were literally first round of demos that he did at home all by himself, all the bass parts, all the guitar parts, every single vocal harmony you hear, the lead, everything is all Lewis Taylor. He's an amazing talent. So what happened after that was he got quite a bit of buzz, and what I mean by quite a bit of buzz, everybody was name-checking him in England, from David Bowie to Elton John. Elton John would literally stop programs if he was on the radio or if he was on a TV doing press junkets. Say, have you heard Lewis Taylor? He's absolutely fabulous. He would show up his album. And Island Records really appreciated that. But I guess the big problem with Lewis Taylor was the fact that a lot of people, he's very hard to pinpoint for music, because a lot of people were trying to pinpoint him in an R&B and soul, and they tried to tag him to that new soul genre. But the problem is he had extensive influences from that, and you could hear it, and obviously the second album and the third album were going to be different. So what happened is Island Records decided to keep pushing him. They tried to make him break through the United States, but it just wasn't the right time. And then somewhere along 2000, they released the second album, and he got a buzz off that. But Island Records was still having trouble marketing Lewis. They gave him like 6 years. And then this is where the story gets interesting. He decides to go independent, and he starts releasing albums. And after a few years of being independent and releasing, I think, 3 albums independently, he had one of the best websites I could think of. I think it got a bit too much for him. And he just decided to unplug everything, not really tell people what was happening, and just literally just black out and just play in a band in the UK and just leave everybody hanging, basically, who was promoting his records. And I guess that's a lesson, because you never know when talent like that is going to go up in smoke for you, whether it's by drugs or whether it's just by choice. And Lewis was that type of person who said, he basically said, I've had it, but in a weird way, because everyone was still pushing for him to promote his music and stuff like that. And it was a lot of people suspect, and they theorize, that he self-sabotaged himself because he did not want to follow up with the pressure of releasing the next album. So that was his way out, and it makes a lot of sense if you look at his catalog of work. And his catalog's pretty amazing, John. I mean, his B-sides are as equal to his album stuff, and
Is there a website up or any place where his material is kind of gathered, or all is it all kind of scattered in the wind these days?
No, it's not scattered in the wind per se. You can go to a MySpace page if you type in Hacktone Records, or if you type in MySpace Lewis Taylor, they still run it, and you can hear some of the tracks off various albums. He did get a placement on Justin Timberlake's album with a song called Love Light on the last Justin Timberlake album. So.
Right.
But again, you know, some people, they still didn't understand that here's a guy who was just adept to playing garage art rock as he was, soul music as he was, art rock, progressive rock, pop.
Reminds me of someone else we've talked about a fair bit on this program, Mr. Cornell.
Yeah, Mr. Cornell, yeah.
I finally saw a live performance of some of his new stuff on the weekend, by the way, and I got to say I've got a mixed opinion, but please continue.
Yeah. And the last album that he did was called The Lost Album, and it's kind of interesting cuz it was the album that he turned in, which was supposed to be the second Lewis Taylor on Island, but they rejected it. And it's a real mixture of California pop and soul music and classic rock and psychedelia kind of vibe, and it's pretty impressive. There's actually a cover of Brian Wilson's Hope No One Finds Us.
Ah, that's a great song.
And it's an amazing, and he nails the harmonies and nails like the melody, and he's just an amazing talent. And you know, a lot of people really do kind of have sorry feelings because they really did invest a lot financially in Lewis Taylor, especially his record label. But you know, just looking at his work and looking at his background, I mean, I could have told you something was going to go wrong eventually. I mean, that song is, I mean, just the way he opens, I mean, that's the opening track to the first album. I could have told you that this guy's going to leave you eventually.
Well, I mean, I'm
really... He did really...
Very smooth production, you know. I mean, I didn't catch that, you know, get that kind of vibe listening, but that was the first, you know, I've heard him. I just thought there was some very nice smooth transitions in there, and I was happy when you kind of told me about the prog rock thing, which probably would mean that, you know, it wasn't just prog rock he was into, but there was something very Tattoo You era Mick in the woohoos in there, but that was just the sound print that my brain found straight away.
Yeah, he did say that he did listen to before in preparation of the album. He was in a Marvin Gaye and Sam Cooke space, so you do hear the like Hear My Dear type of era of Marvin Gaye. If you were to go back to those late 70s, early mid 70s, the Marvin Gaye albums, it's definitely there in the harmonies, and that really did start to he did start to get out of that because he realized that he was being pigeonholed, and he realized that was a bad thing for some of the things he had planned in the works, because they were gonna, it was a little bit different than that. And Lewis Taylor, for those people who don't know, you can get probably get the album on Amazon for like $4, even though it's an import now. It's from 1996, and just look at it. There's five albums.
Right.
There's about five albums you can get, and he's a really interesting artist to get into. David Bowie and Elton John and Daryl Hall were big time fans, and they pledged their allegiance to him, and they wanted him to break it big. But you know, they just had a problem crossing over to the Atlantic. I think one of the big problems is the fact that Lewis didn't want to have to compromise his musical vision, and a lot of the record labels, they really wanted to promote him as a soul and funkster, and that's not what Lewis was about. He really was just about whatever music he was into. That's what he was going to do, and that's why a lot of people were just kind of, they had their arms up. Radio had their arms up. They're like, I don't know what to do with him. But you know, it's funny because
I find,
you know, it's funny because
go ahead, man. Sorry.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, when you listen to stuff like this, I don't think you really need a category. You could put it on rock record. You could put it on rock radio. You could put it on soul radio. He's one of those universal artists, like Bob Marley or like Jimi Hendrix or Stevie Wonder. He can go across the dial, and I think more people need to start embracing that, and you'll start.
I miss that in radio,
David. You'll start prospering.
Yeah, I just miss that. I just miss that so much in radio, David. You know, growing up as a kid, you know, listening to whatever, you know, just the local rock station was, you know, to hear Marvin Gaye.
Yeah.
You know, in the same playlist with a Stones tune, in the same playlist with Yes, used to be kind of standard fare. And the you know, this is all marketing. It's like, it makes me want to go and grab, you know, Bill Hicks' thing on marketing and advertisers, you know.
Right.
You know, because this is one of the things that has hurt music so unbelievably is this needing to be pitched to a category, to be typecast, and to suddenly, you know, you make a big do in one thing, you must continue to put out the same kind of stuff. And that frustrates the hell out of me, and I love it when people stretch out. And, you know, this is, you know, the Prince subject comes up with us all the time, you know, and there's so much of his stuff that I really don't care for, but man, I have so much room for him because he's always taken risks. He's never sat still. He's always tried to do something new and different, stretch himself, stretch his band members, stretch his audience. See, that's, you know, and where I put Prince in the same category as Tool, as I put in the same category as, you know, Rush back in the day. There you go, Tim. You know, bands that didn't, you know, we don't have to just spoon feed the same flavor all the time. And the other recent thing that you've given to me, which is that Joy record, you know, that again, in today's radio market, where would you stick her? She's soul straight through, but there's rock on there, there's ska on there, there's stuff that's just like New Orleans all in a blender in there. And I, you know,
right. And that goes.
Go ahead. Just saying.
And I was just going to say.
I hate this bit with the internet phone. There is just bloody lag that we had. Oh, step on your toe. No, step on your toe. But you know, I'll finish it up.
Yeah.
I'll finish up what I was saying, and then you pick it up. It's just, you find that there are these artists that don't take their audience lightly, don't take their audience as though that they're stupid or of limited vision, and write whatever it is that they feel like writing. Faith No More did similar stuff, you know, for how heavy they are. They've done kooky covers, absolutely spot on to old Chicago tunes, and, you know, and stuff that's been like some of the most authentic country. Weezer's another one. You know, that and whose audience has followed along, you know, that got it. And I just really, it's detrimental to there being more good music made. Pick it up.
Yeah, I think the problem is there's so much, people want the hyper fast buck now, which isn't really a reality now, and they keep gambling for it. And it really is about development of an artist. And it seems like artist development is exactly a thing of the past, and artists have to develop themselves.
Yeah.
And a lot of those projects suffer because of that. One thing I did want to mention, though, that wasn't music-related, I do have a funny story that I think you will find humorous, and I found it rather bizarre, but still hysterical at the same time. Apparently someone sold a very valuable film on eBay for $5.98.
What film?
It's a lost Charlie Chaplin film.
No shit.
From World War I.
Holy crap.
It's regarded as the find. Yeah, I know. It's regarded as the find of the last 100 years. And the amazing thing about it is it's a World War I type propaganda film. It's called Charlie Chaplin Zapped Out. It has nothing to do with Jimmy Page, people. And it's just funny to me that someone, you know, the funny thing is they didn't even know. Here's the crazy thing about it. They didn't even know. They just bid on an old film canister, and he opened it up, and it said Charlie Chaplin on it, and he said, I better talk to my friend, because I know that this film is considered a relic. Maybe this is the one. So he goes next door to see his neighbor, and he tells him, holy shit, I think you found, I don't know if this is it, but if it is, this is the find of the century right here. And apparently, I guess, the lost film of Charlie Chaplin has resurrected via eBay. Go figure.
Yeah, go figure. That's just astounding. I'll have to look. Have they put this up that it can be viewed anywhere, or is this something it looks like that they're going to go to the highest bidder for the first airing?
It's still early in the game. They're going to probably do a lot of restoring and digital mastering as it is to try to get. They're probably going to try to hawk the shit out of this on DVD.
Oh, you'd have to. I mean, really. If you came across that, you'd just be like going, you know, at least just for that first airing, you know, to give some network, you know, be sitting there going, how much is this worth to you, Sunshine?
Well, you know, personally, I think I found it interesting that they gave it to the Charlie Chaplin Preservation Society. I thought that they originally, I think, with an item like that, they should give it to the family estate. But that's just me.
I agree. I agree. I was just going, you know, human nature kind of thing, like going, I could set myself up for a good long while with this one.
Right. So I just wanted to open that up before we get into the last tier of our conversation, which is dreadfully politics.
Right. What you got?
Yeah. Let's start off with a no, that didn't happen type moment. I don't know if you heard about the there was a protest today at the White House.
No, I missed this one.
A lot of African American black militants, and they said, I'm quoting this now. They said, Obama is white power in blackface.
Are you kidding? Oh, man.
That's one of those that he just... But you know what? He did have... Here's the difference than a usual Tea Party. Yeah, he had his reasons for that to back it up. And I found myself nodding along with him on a lot of these points. And it has to do with issues of military involvement, of how we treat renditioning, and just how we treat our citizens in general in this country now. But I wouldn't put that on so much on Obama as I would put that on the establishment, and that's where things get really, really confusing. Because then, who do you point the finger to, and what do you charge them with? That's the problem.
It's because the beast is diseased and has been sick for a long time.
Yeah.
So
what was your reaction to
Fort Hood?
To watching the healthcare? Did you watch some of the?
Oh, okay.
The debating at the House.
I didn't get to watch much of the debating. I saw some of the backslapping moments and whatnot that were going on with the Dems afterwards.
Right.
And, you know, I tell you what, I'm such a mixed bag on this at the moment, David. I mean, when you get down to the nitty-gritty, the bill's a piece of shit, okay? It doesn't have, as far as I understand, it doesn't have any kind of the public option kind of thing that I have lived with for many years that I know brings costs down, that I know stops bankruptcies, that I know does, you know, all this stuff. The no-brainer that actually anyone who looks at the issue clearly can see when you pull the spin out of the whole game and you actually find that switch in your brain and you're able to flip it and accept the concept that healthcare does not have to be for profit all of the time. I've been reading Dennis Kucinich's response, and, you know, Just like you were saying with these protesters, you know, I read his notes and it's just like, well, man, you know, I cannot argue with the thing that you've said. But then, because I know,
exactly.
I know the boat that is the United States turns really fucking slow, if it ever turns at all. The fact that something has gotten through to actually start the wheels in motion, and you start having some people see that those that will get coverage get some benefit, it's going to end up, those people are going to go, hey, you know what, this public option thing can work. And hoping that, you know, by actually getting something happening, man, because the way it's going, it's just going to fall apart. And we keep having the wrong conversation yet again, where they say, you know, it's like, oh, will it add to the deficit or won't it? It's just like, no. No, 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 no. And instead of, you know, are we paying for it up front or not, it's kind of not the issue. It's about creating a system that makes healthcare accessible for people. You have a healthier population. See, this is where the conservatives, I should think, should be able to jump on board. You know, they need workers. You know, they're business. They want workers. Well, you have healthier workers. You have a healthier workforce. You have less sick time. You have more productive employees. The cost has been removed from the businesses, which, you know, the United States is the only country that asks businesses to carry the weight the way that they do. And, you know, it's... again, you know, I've been saying this stuff since Bruce and I first launched Fourth Estate Radio. My most frustrating thing with the United States ever since I left is the fact that I've come to the conclusion is that we never, ever, ever, ever have the right conversations. We have ones that skirt around it, ones that deal with fringe issues, but we never actually go, hey, look, there's the fucking elephant. Let's talk about that.
Well, you know, it's interesting how things are playing out regarding this, and I was talking to a friend who's pretty smart when it comes to political issues and bills and stuff, and he is a conservative. And I asked him, I said, so you're really scared about the healthcare option? I said, and you're not scared with the corporations? I said, do you think that insurance is not going to skyrocket with them? Do you think they're just going to be able to keep it level? And he really said that he really is under the impression that what the government is going to do is going to run out a lot of people out of business, and no one's going to be able to afford proper health care. And he really does think that regarding the amount toward health care, a lot of people are pulling the old wool over people's eyes. And
well,
I don't know. I mean, it is a 2,000 page bill. I'm going to have to look and see exactly the points that kind of make me a little bit skeptical on it. But then there's the side of me, John, that sort of agrees with him in this point, is I always am kind of skeptical when someone says to me, and as we all should be, well, we're going to do something for you that's historic. And that's when I start wondering, it's like, okay, where does this start and where does this end, and that kind of thing. And it seems to me that I don't think anyone has a real framework of how to accomplish healthcare in this country and to get it correctly done with the sort of structure we have in this country in place right now. There's going to have to be a lot of dismantling. And, you know, Obama's team, I don't know, they think they can work their magic and be able to work in the current structure that we have in this country. And it's rather, I don't know, John, it's like it's really a bizarre moment. And it's like...
that's one way to put it, Dave.
It's like... yeah, it's like really, it's a dizzy effect, right?
Yeah.
You know when you used to go to you know what it's like when you used to go to the carnival, right? And they had the thing called the Gravitron, and you get inside it, and they spin it around and around and around.
And you stick to the outside
and
wall.
All of a sudden, you lose that. Yeah, you lose that sense of gravity, and you know you have that surreal experience where you think you can do amazing things, but you can't. You're not able to move, but you do feel kind of enlightened or something, and it's just transcendental. And that's the way I feel when I hear a lot of people repeating over and over again about healthcare, historic, and the only people I trust, John. I have a very small list of people I trust, which is Grayson and Kucinich.
Yeah.
And that's it.
I might.
Everyone else seems to me.
I might catch a bit of flack, but I.
Yeah.
I have to at least give some kind of kudos to Pelosi. Now, I'm seeing in the chat room that supposedly she cherry-picked all of Kucinich's amendments out. I'm really pissed off about the abortion amendment. That was just cowing to the holy rollers, which I find unfortunate, you know, because it's the same thing as, you know, Viagra's covered but birth control's not, you know, currently in Medicare and currently,
yeah,
you know, it's the same thing here. But throughout this debate, which has been so screwball, man, we've had the fucking teabaggers and Michelle Bachmann, and we got Glenn Beck, and man, Stewart taking the piss out of Beck the other night was just a thing of beauty. But it's been like probably one of the worst moments of trying to herd cats that I've seen in recent political history. And I think even without getting the kind of bill that you or I or most of the listeners of the Horn would have thought would be the way to go, I do think Nancy Pelosi deserves a few kudos for keeping the fucking thing on track in some way, shape, or form. And she did push for the public option. She did make, she made some really hard statements. I do think that she fought more than people give her credit for. But I can cop some of that. I could be wrong, but just, you know, as I was reading, you know, you constantly every couple of weeks should have Pelosi in an interview or Pelosi in a statement just going, no, sorry, this isn't good enough. And when that whole markup game was being played with the Republicans only sending one guy at a time, just so that they couldn't get it forward, Pelosi and Reid found a way to just go, you know what, y'all gonna play this stupid childish bullshit? We're just gonna bypass you. Now, they bypassed with what is not the bill we want, but I don't like the fact that this has been a mandate for private insurance companies. If I'm reading the summaries right, I haven't been able to go through the bill yet, and we got a long way to go get through the Senate, which, you know, it'll get changed around, and then it's probably got to go back to the House for the amendments to be verified and voted on and all that bullshit. And I'm hoping that this bill is already better than the bill was 2 weeks ago, if I understand right. And I'm saying shades away from what I believe it should be. But it has, you know, because of folks like Grayson, you know, getting down there and just saying, you know what? What they're saying is a load of shit. Stop listening to it and look at the facts of how many people go into bankruptcy, how many people have died, and the realities of this absolutely inhumane system that we have. And I had a stark reality thrown in my face through the week. You know, I'm talking about how I am new to the Facebook thing, and I'm diving in the pool really, really late. I got into a discussion on somebody's wall, and I'm not going to mention any names or nothing, and it probably doesn't matter. She wouldn't listen to this program anyway. Where, you know, someone asked, should illegal immigrants get health care? You know, and a big thumbs down, right? So, I just came into the thread, and this...
Yeah, I know where this one's going.
But this is all... The point that... I probably could have done it better by not using the opening line that I did. The opening line I used was, I hope you understand there's no such thing as an illegal human being. That said, and then I explained how here in Australia, people who are not here legally don't get free health care, and why. Okay? And the reason being is that there's that there are valve checks, and to once you're an immigrant into the country, and you're paying your tax, your Medicare card, right? As an adult. Now, if you don't if you don't pay your taxes every year, you kind of don't get the check on your box that says you can get your Medicare card renewed. So very, very simply, you get out of it if you're paying into it, right? So this dispels two myths straight away. One about illegal people getting health care and whether or not the thing's paid for. And I explained how that there's this little Medicare levy that comes down in everybody's taxes. It's less than 3% of your income every year, and it pays for most of your health care. And it's capped, you know, it's done, and, you know, it's capped on both ends. So if you don't make enough money, you don't pay. And if you make a bunch of money, after a certain point, you stop paying in. And it's a very, very fair system. No one here would in a second say, you know, get rid of it. We've got issues with it. It needs to, the system needs work. It's 20 or 30 years since it was launched. Yeah, it needs tweaking. It needs an overhaul. But it doesn't mean that the concept or the system itself is wrong. So immediately, it all came down about my illegal immigrant statement. And very quickly, the subject that was about so-called illegal immigrants, people that I call, you know, migrants, without proper paperwork, getting health care, suddenly turned into a massive racial hate fest. All very thinly veiled. And there's this certain pocket in American culture, man, and that are still this way. And it's amazing how you, and this is the problem with wedge issues, man. These people, you get pollsters and strategists, they create these wedge issues so that you can, and it makes it easy for people to hate other people and find ways to cover their asses. And it's scary.
You know, speaking of that, I want to tie into something that you may find interesting about, and this kind of gives you an example of where we are at in this country, and it ties into a little bit about the profiling. I don't know if you know this, but my family, they were stationed in Fort Hood back in the 80s for 1 year. And my dad was on that military base, and that was when I told my parents, I said, you know, you guys should get out of the military. I basically said this. I said, you should get out of the military because it seems like it's a dead end. And my dad thought about it for a while, and he decided. Anyways, cut to the chase. About a year or 2 years ago, my dad was at the airport, and he had his first instance of profiling. But for those who don't know, my name looks Arabic. And the way the computer database works, and here's the problem with the system that we live in, because we're going to, as a family, and my name especially, this is how the NSA and the echelon and the computer grid, how it's all prejudice tied in together just by data and statistics that they don't think is prejudice. So my dad went to the airport about 2 years ago, and they actually stopped him at the airport, and they were trying to convince him that he was related to a guy named Muhammad. My dad said, no.
Yeah. And?
I'm not kidding you, John. He goes, no. The spelling. No, he goes, the spelling is this. So I guess my point is that the shooter has a similar name to ours.
Oh,
yeah. He's stationed in Fort Hood.
Right.
So you see how this works is I'm going to spend an extra hour guaranteed at the airport because of the stupid system that they have set up with variations of names. It doesn't mean a damn people, because if you have any kind of Arabic sounding name that even sounds remotely to that, and you're missing one letter, you're going to get stopped and you're going to get profiled. They're going to say, why were you here, and why is your name this, and are you related to this person? It doesn't matter what you look like at that point.
Why did your parents name you the way you...
It all goes down to the name.
I mean, how stupid is that? Why did your parents name you that? I don't know. I mean, come on, I wasn't there yet.
No, I mean, but Yeah, I mean, my name, here's the thing about it. I can't, it has to do with our last
I got
Shooter's name.
I know, I'm being slightly flippant, but still I think the point is kind of valid, you know.
Yeah.
Being questioned about, you know, why is your name what it is? It's just like, did you really just ask me that question, or are you just a fucking idiot? I think that would have to be my response in the case.
I find it interesting. And Tom Hartman made this example. He pointed this out. He said, "We're talking about the shooter in such a exploitive way that we don't think back in history." And he made a reference to the last shooter that was in Killeen, Texas. And he said, many people don't know about what set off this shooter. And it was allegedly, Anita Hill Clarence Thomas trial.
Oh, right.
And then he started shooting people in Killeen, Texas. And I thought, wow, you know, you didn't hear about that. You didn't hear about the reason why he was shooting up all these people. But immediately, you see you see everything connected to an anti-American sentiment, pulling hard on his Muslim roots and background, Jordan, all of this, putting, connect the dots. And it's really frightening in a sense because, as I told someone, I said, if there is even the remote chance that this guy was tied to anything, or I'm the type of person that's really cynical, that they will just throw some evidence on his computer and tie him to a terrorist organization, because that's how jaded our system has become. If they can't find the evidence, they do the same thing when they have the rendition rooms. Tie the person to the terrorist organization that is the easiest, that is the most wanted on the map. And to me, the problem is that when you get into the issue of technology, when you get into the issue of people's computers, and you tie to the fact that they're Arabic, and they're from Jordan, and they have Muslim background, I mean, I wouldn't trust anything at this point of where someone says, this is what he was, this is how he was related to.
Well, yeah, on the jet.
I don't know if you caught.
Sorry, go ahead and finish.
Yeah, I don't know if you know this, but they were talking to his neighbor on CNN, and he said that he found something strange that he was using his computer instead of his own. For some reason, he would go next door, and I guess they confiscated the neighbor's computer. And then I thought, oh, Jesus, please do not have any ties to any Al-Qaeda organizations on the computer or anything like that. Please don't be on any of those message boards.
Mm.
And it really struck me as they really do want to tie our president to being a Muslim sympathizer. And they will tie him to being a Muslim sympathizer if they do find extensive information regarding his background, and they'll try to say that they should have been a little bit more harsher. But see, this is the problem, John, is the fact that people don't realize that they're setting up the next line for hate crimes in this country.
See,
with every single flash of the news.
You're right where I'm right with you, because on the day that the incident took place, you know, it was morning here. You know, sitting there on the web before Bob's show started. So I started a post on the front page of the network site and was doing updates as they came in, you know, and I was going and I was waiting until I got really concrete updates. And if you go and look at the post, there's not that much updated, right? You know, by the time our broadcast day went, because I was only going to mention things that I knew I could mention, right? Or I knew that I could confirm and that I'd seen confirmed in, you know, in a couple of different locations, you know, whether it was body counts or whatever. But it was interesting that, you know, right from the beginning, gunman shot dead. And then a few hours later, we find out, oh, no, he's not dead. He's just, you know, he's just really fucking injured. But then.
Yeah.
When his name was released and I just went, oh,
fuck no, please no, please no, please no, because I knew what was going to happen. You know, WorldNet Daily had some headline that the shooter had advised the transition team, Obama's transition team, and what a load of shit. And, you know, where they're going, oh, you know, we should be checking these people better. This guy was like a long-term serviceman. This guy had been through all of his medical training through the military,
right.
You know. I mean, this is not something, you know, where you, Joe Lieberman, if that guy was ever within arm's reach, I'd be slapping the fucking daylights out of him. Because that guy going out there and actually calling this guy a terrorist is not helping anybody but Joe Lieberman. And I find that absolutely appalling because we don't really know what's going on yet. And we need to look.
Right.
And it's all deflection from the fact that we've been sending good young men and women back to these two hellholes over and over and over and over again. And it just goes to prove even a mental health care guy sometimes needs some work, you know, needs some help. I mean, and from what I understand, he's a revert, you know, because they don't call themselves converts. They call themselves reverts because Islam supposedly states that everyone's born a Muslim. And those that come, you know, that would call themselves converts actually are reverts. It's, and that's all semantics, and that's all not a big deal. But it was after 9/11/2001 that he went and started in the guise of researching his enemy, and he discovered a different Islam than he was told about, became a revert. Now, that seems like a very kind of natural progression that a person could go through. I personally wouldn't have gone through that, but I can see how someone would do it. But then, what was it that ended up turning him a different direction? Was it, you know, I mean, and I don't like to speculate about anything, and I actually won't, but I have to believe that this backdoor draft and a pointless kind of game plan in both Iraq and Afghanistan are probably what led to this, regardless of however it's portrayed. And I the Fox News fuckers sitting there doing their game of, you know, sitting there going, was he a sale? Is it a sale? Is it a sale? It's like, Jesus Christ, y'all watch too much fucking 24. It's not helping.
Yeah.
And now we're going to start profiling every good Muslim that might be in our military. It just shocks me to my core.
Absolutely. I think what's going to come next is you're going to have the backdoor internment camps for a lot of people who are Muslim in America. If we do have a Republicans, the hardcore right wing back in charge, which who knows what's going to happen in 2010. I know a lot of people in the left say, I mentioned this before, John, that a lot of people, they really are naive when it comes to this, and I'm sorry if you're one of them and you're listening to this, that just because someone is down and out at the moment doesn't mean they're going to be right back up. And, you know, when you look at an incident like this, this kicked a lot of political capital into the right for the whole terror issue.
I don't think
all it takes is another copycat. Copycat shooting.
I don't know, David. I don't know if it's so much political capital, but it ended up stirring up the fear thing, and it gave them something to go to, and that can and unfortunately, that could end up leading to a fervor that gives them political capital. So I don't think that they've actually gained anything yet. But, you know, I mean, just absolutely.
Yeah, I understand.
You know what I mean? But it's just crazy. But hey, man, we're at the top of the hour. You and I have killed an entire hour, which is awesome. And thank you for the track.
Oh, okay.
I am going to try and stick to a little bit of a schedule here. But man, I look forward to next week. We'll do the same time each week. We'll get some links together for Gene to stick up on the blog for the artist this week for people to go and find. So send me the MySpace and whatnot, and we can put it up there, and people can go and check out some of that stuff.
All right, that's cool.
Okay, John, I look forward to talking to you next week and bringing forth a new track that will keep you guessing.
Right on, brother. Thank you very much, man. Always appreciate it.
Later, man.
All right, man. Bye-bye. And as David from Maine, pop culture correspondent, guy's great. I love what he brings to this program. So we're going to take a real quick break, and I think we'll do the turnaround a little late, but we'll play the song that must be played once a show. You listen to Foxed Up on the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. We'll be right back, and as always, stay human.
Starvation is a creation of the devil, the rebel. I'm bringing food to the people like a widow, bringing flowers to a grave in the middle of the city. Isolation is a riddle. To be surrounded by a million other people, but feel alone like a tree in the desert, dried up like the skin of a lizard, but full of color like the spots of a leopard. Drum and bass pull me in like a shepherd, scratch my itch like a needle on the record, pull a life like a man going to Mecca. Sky high like an eagle up soaring, I speak low but I'm like a lion roaring, baritone like a Robeson recording. I'm giving thanks for being human every morning, morning, morning. Because the streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. Can I hear it once again? Boom bap. Tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. Can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. Be resistant the negativity, we keep it at a distance. Call for backup and I'll give you some assistance. Like a lifesaver deep in the ocean. Stay afloat here upon the funky motion. Rock and roll upon the waves of the season. Hold your breath and you're underwater breathing. To be rhyming without a real reason is to claim and not to practice a religion. If television is the drug of the nation, satellite is immaculate reception. Beaming in, they can look and they can listen. So you see, don't believe in the system. To legalize you or give you your freedom, you want rights, ask them to read them. But every flower got a right to be blooming. Stay human, because the streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. Can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Aha. We saw the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Stay human. You see why 2K and 2T is a moment in time we find that we can open up a heart that's locked or been broken by the pain of words not spoken, nor shot by guns or still smoking. Cartwrights out on the Ponderosa, or drive by banging Testarossa. We need to heed the words of Dalai Lama, or at least the words of your mama. Take a mental trip to the Bahamas. Steam your body in a stereo sauna, sauna, comma. Because the streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom.
on back, but tell your neighbor, tell a friend, every flower got a right to be blooming. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Ha 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 ha. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Stay human.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
We should be able to deliver bottled hot water to dehydrated babies.
What the hell is that shit?
Two down, one to go. It's your third hour of All Foxed Up with John Fox. You can reach the show at 877-443-2366. Let's get back to John on the Head On Radio Network.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the final hour of Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. And big thank you to Dave for the track, and Gene's putting links to the artist up on today's show post at foxedup.headonradionetwork.com as we speak, the news ninja that he is. And I reckon we should just go straight to the phones. Hey, welcome to Foxed Up. Who've we got?
Hi, John.
Hey, Cassie. How are you, darling?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I have normal phones. I'm a happy man.
Yeah. I called you on your normal phone.
So you sent me a post that you've got up at the moment, and I noticed that you got a bit of a Dixie Chicks video in there. Tell us about that.
Okay. So there's a Dixie Chicks song called Traveling Soldier, which is, it's a Vietnam song, but it's about how this guy who's about to get sent to Vietnam spends an afternoon with a high school girl, and she ends up falling in love with him, and he sends her letters, and he goes to Vietnam, and he sends her letters and stuff, and then when he dies, she find out that he dies, and but she like doesn't tell people, and then when she's hearing at the football game when they read the name of all of the people from the town who died in the Vietnam War, she goes under the stands and is crying by herself.
I know, it's a beautiful it's a beautiful song, which I've actually got it queued up here waiting for when we finish the call, so I think we should play it, but please continue.
Okay, so what I was thinking about on Friday when all of this happened, or I guess Fort Hood happened on Thursday, but we had like moments of silence and stuff on Friday, and what I was thinking about was who, like, President Obama sent his sympathies, and everybody else sent their sympathies to the families, but who else loved the people that died? Like, did they have somebody that, you know, they were sending letters to when they were in Iraq or Afghanistan? Did they have somebody, you know, that they loved that nobody knows about who's, like, crying by themselves? So I did this blog post and I put Traveling Soldier up because I thought, I'm sure there's someone out there.
Absolutely. And Fried, I'll check it out. Those of you that don't know Cassie's blog, it's freckleskassie.wordpress.com. Just a great blog. I mean, I love it. And, you know, you have this wonderful knack of finding a piece of the heart of a situation that a lot of people don't find. And, you know, we can be very flippant and think very short term that, you know, all they had was, you know, a wife and kids or this or that. And it's not necessarily family. You know, it's friends. We have so many human connections and we're connected in so many ways that, you know, I think
yeah.
A lot of people can be forgotten, and it's not by any malice or anything else like that. But I think you bring up a really interesting point that, you know, some people don't have family, and their family is their friends. I'm one that for many periods of my life, my family were always my friends. As usual, Cassie, you kind of nail one. How's the college hunting going?
The college hunting is going really well. I've sent in, like, all but three of my applications. I sent in all of the November 1st ones, and then I sent in all of the November 15th ones, and now there's a few more. I've still actually got colleges contacting me, so I'm not telling anybody what the complete list is. But I'm going to the Northeast during Thanksgiving break to look at colleges, so that's going to be good. But there's something else. If there are other people listening in Texas, all of the Texas blood centers and the Seton hospitals are all doing blood drives because there were over 30 people who were wounded in Fort Hood. And anybody who's in Central Texas, if you can give blood, they need it.
Yeah,
they need it in Killeen and they need it at the hospital in Temple. But you can give in Austin or Round Rock or, you know, any place that's connected to the Texas blood centers.
Yeah, and I know that the Red Cross was doing collections in Waco. We were announcing all this on the night, and it's something in White Hospital where most of the victims were taken to. They were also looking for blood of all types. Anyone that can get there and to donate blood, really,
you have to be 17 and 110 pounds and not have had like leukemia and not have certain diseases.
Yeah, yeah.
But I thought it was 18 and I went and I found out that it was 17 and I put on my Facebook page, to get my friends who were juniors and seniors to come. And we actually had 9 people from my class donate.
Hey, and you know, it's kind of like a cliche, but seriously, the one thing that you can do, the easiest thing that you can do to give life is to give blood. And they definitely need it down there. And good on you, Cassie, you know.
And it's not hard. It didn't take, I mean, there was a line because it was Thursday night, and I think, you know, and they put out a call on the news, and, that, you know, it was kind of crowded Thursday night. But once you got to the area where they were actually, you know, where you filled out the forms and they were actually taking the blood, the whole thing took like, I don't know, 10 minutes.
And then they give you cookies.
And then they give you juice and cookies. Right. And they give you juice and cookies. Like, you know, it's like kindergarten.
Yeah, it's a bit like that. I tell you.
Well, I mean, you know, like, I don't eat juice and cookies very often, but.
But you know, it's a bit of sugar, it's a bit of liquid, it's that whole idea, and then you get the little sticker that says, you know, be nice to me, I gave blood today, and you get an excuse to kind of chill out for the rest of the day. So, it's a good thing all the way around.
It happened Thursday. We didn't even go until 8 o'clock Thursday night, so there wasn't a rest of the day.
Right on, Cassie. What you know?
But I don't think there's a line anymore. I think. Probably it was just the first day that there was a line to give blood.
Yeah, and you know, it's a good thing to do if you can do it. But Cass,
it's the first time I did it.
Congratulations! I've done it plenty of times, and actually, it's something that I, on a regular basis, kick myself that I actually haven't gotten back into the habit of it since I've lived here. I used to do it on a regular basis, kind of something that I picked up from my stepdad. He was one of those guys that, you know, like did it as often as you can for like 40 something years, and he had some special, you know, I'm in the million pint club or some crazy thing like that.
they start counting it in gallons when you get.
Yeah.
So when you do it for a while. but they send you an email every 10 weeks. They can send you an email and tell you it's time to give blood and tell you where, like, this one you had to go to the hospitals and the blood centers, but there are other ones where there are places near school or at school or near work where you can go when it's not, you know, an emergency.
Yeah. But, you know, good on you, Cassie. This is how we get things done, you know, in our own small way, but a small gesture can end up meaning somebody's life in this particular instance. But, you know.
Well, eight of my friends, you know, there were nine people, eight of my friends went, so that's pretty cool.
Good on Cassie's friends. Big round of applause for you all. It's just, that's fantastic.
So, the other thing I wanted to say is about the PTSD. People have said, and I've seen it, like, I don't watch Fox News, but I've seen it, I've seen comments where people have said that, oh, he couldn't have had PTSD because he wasn't in Afghanistan yet. But you can have PTSD from anything.
And, I mean, this guy...
You can have PTSD. And you can also have, you know, fear that paralyzes you and stuff. But the military, they'll send you anyway. I mean, my brother was in an anger management program here, and he was, like, dealing with all of this stuff because he'd been really violent last fall. And as soon as he wasn't my guardian anymore, the military sent him, like 2 months later, they sent him to Afghanistan.
And, you know, he wasn't
mentally perfect.
No.
I don't know what to say. I mean, I don't know how to phrase that.
No one is. And to use Peter Gobbold's term, you know, normal is only a setting on a hairdryer, you know. And... This shooter in particular, I mean, this guy was a mental health care professional, and I would think that he would end up, if he had no outlet of his own, no one to go to, he had been, you know, the sounding board for God knows what kind of horrors for guys that have been there and ladies
right.
that have been there, you know. So I mean, this guy had been very possibly just the emotional dumping ground for a whole lot of people over the years, and it ended up breaking him.
Did any of, like, I haven't been listening for a few days, obviously, but have any of you talked to Rick Goodner? Did he give his input at all about,
no, and
you know, mental health professionals? And because he hears stuff from, you know, he hears stuff from people all the time. I mean, there must be some way that they learn to deal with it.
Well,
I
have to give you some bad news. I have to give you some bad news there. Rick Goodner's hung up his show as of Friday. He just, he, he, um, uh,
He just couldn't stand having to get up every day and rail against his own party. And I think it just got to be, I think he got over it, which I can understand, because I have trouble sometimes, you know, even though I'm not necessarily party affiliated anymore, but I am pulling for the Democrats because it's the only option that I've got in America at the moment. Bring on some parliamentary preference system, please. But I would love to hear Rick Goodner's take. Oh, well, the ability to where I can vote for a third party candidate, and if that third party candidate doesn't actually make it over the line to win, or you know, be one of the top two, I then set a preference.
Uh-huh.
So like if I vote for the Green candidate.
Oh, like the second chance vote, the second
right.
where you right. They have that one of the states on the East Coast. I forget which one.
Yeah, it's one. It's,
I learned it, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's up in New England,
like
somewhere. They
Vermont
have that,
or someplace.
Yeah, they have it in local elections where you can do that, and that's where you look in a place like it might be Vermont. The way Vermont is one of the states that actually has a very very strong statewide Green Party, and it's because they people are given a way to vote for these parties as they're growing, make their voice known, saying I'm voting for the Green, say, you know, the Green policy, but if he doesn't get in, my vote goes to either the Democrat or whatever your next candidate is, and if that knocks them over the line, they know that so much of their vote came from these alternate parties, and that should influence their policy in some ways, knowing who got them in. It's how, you know, it's what kicked Kevin Rudd over the line here in Australia last time around was the Green vote. So I think it's
he has to be good to the people in the Green Party.
Well, you kind of hope so, because when election time comes around, he's got to look and go, well, you know, 8-10% of the vote that got me over the line came from Green people. So, and you know, there's bits that I have big issues with his climate change policy, but he is trying to do something. And actually, Kevin, I should have covered it on the show today. He had a right ripper of a bit of a speech calling out all the deniers across the world, and it was just absolutely it was tough, it was to the point, and it was personal. And
so of course we don't hear about it in America.
But you know, he's much better than where we were, and we're making steps, and I'm hoping that, you know, we'll get something serious happening here, and I do think that he's serious about it about getting something going when it comes to climate change. But right now we've got suddenly a whole bunch of Sri Lankan immigrants coming on boats at the moment because the civil war there has just ended recently, and so we have a distraction right now, which is unfortunate. Where, like in America, the dog whistle's gone off for the immigrant wedge issue, and so we're dealing with that nonsense at the moment. But that's politics for you.
That's like. Okay, the people who don't want to help the immigrants, that, it gets me so upset, because it's like, every life is sacred unless they don't have papers.
Yeah, I keep trying to tell people there's no such thing as an illegal human being. Oh, Cassie, you're growing up. Listen to that sigh.
Okay.
But you know, Cassie, I tell you what, I don't have all that much time left, and I do want to, since you brought up traveling,
okay.
I do want, since you brought up traveling soldier, I'm going to play it and take a little break and come back and open up the phones for others. But, darling, it's always good to talk to you,
okay.
and enjoy your trip over Thanksgiving.
Good to talk to you.
And can't wait to hear about the trip when you come back.
Okay,
all right.
Thanks.
Take it easy, Cass.
Bye.
And that was our good friend, Cassie. And just... let's do this. We'll take a little break. Phone lines open. Whoever wants to get in next, 304-574-7811.
And we'll bring you on after this. The Dixie Chicks. Traveling Soldier.
2 days past 18, he was waiting for the bus in his army green. Sat down in a booth in a cafe there. Gave his order to a girl with a bow in her hair. He's a little shy, so she gave him a smile. And he said, would you mind sitting down for a while and talking to me? I'm feeling a little low. She said, I'm off in an hour and I know where we can go. So they went down and they sat on the pier. He said, I bet you got a boyfriend, but I don't care. I got no one to send a letter to. Would you mind if I sent one back here to you?
Never gonna hold the hand up.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. We've got about 30 minutes left in the program, and we got somebody on the phone. Hey, welcome to Foxed Up. Who we got?
Hi. Hello?
Yes, who we got?
Yes, me, Tim.
Hey, Tim, how are you, my friend?
I'm right, John. How are you, bro?
I'm doing really, really good. I can't even express how happy I am to have normal phones again. It's just been way too long. It's so much simpler.
Oh, my gosh. And I finally get to talk to the famous John Fox.
Oh, famous my ass. But anyway, in my own lunchtime, what have you got to bring into the pool here today, my friend?
Well, first of all, I want to say hi, everyone in the chat room. Hi, everyone listening to Cat on Radio Network. This is a great place to be. But what I wanted to comment on was, you know, the shooting in Fort Hood, Texas. And, you know, since 9/11 or whatever, everyone says, they're saying, you know, this person is Muslim. But, you know, when I look at the names or look at the ethnicity of these people, they're Asians. And it's like, are they trying to, like, desensitize the people, you know, like the Bushcraft family did, so that they blame the religion and not really the ethnicity or something? Or is it just because everyone is saying, you know, they're not, like Iraq and Afghanistan, that's in Asia, but people are saying, oh, it's an Arab country. No, it's not. Arabs is in Northern Africa.
Yeah.
And it just, I mean, it seems like they're, you know, they're trying to desensitize or trying to group people into one thing, which they're not.
Well, I mean,
I'm going to lose your identity. I don't know.
You're opening up a real can of worms here, but I mean, you know, part of me, you know, you sit there and go, it's like, what are they trying to bring back the Asian scare thing again? Because there's a generation that came from that. Is that easy to stir up? Because it's one that's used here a lot.
Right.
But I really think that it comes down to playing to that holy roller population that, you know, the Muslims are trying to kill the Christians and trying to put this thing into some sort of religious war idea, even though they'll never admit it and all that. And you know, I was just sitting there in shock horror when the shooter's name was announced, and I just was like going, oh, shit, here we go. We really didn't need this now. You know, and here's a guy that obviously served for a long time. Instead of looking at the fact that he reverted to Islam, how about we look at what had put the strain on him to break him?
Oh, well, that's the first thing that popped into my mind. He said that he was going to go to Afghanistan, and then he just snapped, and I said, oh, I guess he went mad or something. But it wasn't, and then you know, you hear Lieberman saying, oh, yeah, he's, you know, a homegrown terrorist. It's like, shut up, Joe.
I fucking hate that son of a bitch, really. I really do. You know, I'm not a person, you know, it's like I'm not a violent person. I'm not a vindictive person. At least I don't think so. Some people might think so. But, you know, I read the transcript. I couldn't even watch the video. But, you know, I watched the transcript, and it's just like, you know what? Fuck you, Joe. This only serves you and your everyone's out to kill, you know, Israel thing. And, you know, I just really, you know, we got enough problems there. We got enough problems with that whole situation to begin with. We don't need people using events for their own means. I guess it's always going to happen. But, you know, that guy is just becoming the biggest political opportunist in like the most narcissistic fashion. Like, it's all about me. And that bugs the shit out of me. It really does. You know, and I sit there and think, you know, when straight after 9/11, a good friend of mine was the lighting guy for the Wiggles, okay? The Wiggles. And every time he had to fly to L.A., he'd just notify whoever was picking him up saying, look, my flight lands at such and such, come 4 hours later. Because I will be brought in for questioning just because he had a Lebanese name. You know, going back to what David was talking about, you know. And, I mean, this guy has, like, been in and out of, like, almost every international airport in the world, probably,
traveling with the Wiggles and various other acts, you know. I mean, the Wiggles, this, you know, it's just like so insane. I remember him telling me this on the road once. We were in a Tarago coming back down from Queensland or something. And he's sitting going, yeah. He goes, I go through the strip search, the cavity search, all of it. And it's just like, you know, don't you guys have a file from when I was here 6 weeks ago? And I just find all this stuff is just lame excuses to cover people's racism as opposed to actually getting down to what is the nitty gritty. We got wars that have been going on way too long. We're stuck in the quagmire of quagmires, which is Afghanistan. You know, we're playing to the same side that the Russians backed, and we're backing a government that has no control of anything. So, you know, I mean, really, it's like a circular firing squad out there.
I mean, it's racism down, I mean, out and out. Xenophobia, it's everything that, I mean, me being an Asian American, you know, fears the most, but at the same time, they're using the word terrorism, I mean, you know, to cover up the racism. I mean, during World War II, my dad was beaten the shit out of because he was, you know, because he looked like the enemy. I mean, he was only 6 years old at the time, and a bunch of guys used to spit on him, kick on him, bury him in the snow till he was bleeding, and then, you know, they call him Little Tojo during the war, and he was an American citizen. But the last name, my last name, and is sounds like the enemy.
Kid A in the chat room says, "Come on, John. Everyone knows the Wiggles are an Al Qaeda front group." don't even let me go down that route.
Go for it.
No, man, because I've worked with those guys. I actually kind of they're you know, I kind of dig.
I'll get pissed off more though.
Nah, you know, I mean,
well, that's what it is.
They're all right, man. I think they're all right. You know, yeah, the music can drive any adult nuts, but you know, it's entertainment for kids that doesn't talk down to them, and anything that does that, I'm happy with, and it gets them interested in music. It's all really good. And they were, you know, a lot of people don't realize they were a cover band that used to play pubs. And then because two of them have degrees in early education, came up with this concept. And it's been like, you know, no turning back. This is the first year, I think, that they're not in the top five Australian entertainment earners, and they've been there for like the past decade. But they're still right up there. But you know, you talk about your dad, and you know, there's this horrible thing that it's happened here in Australia. It's happened in the United States, where you know a new group of people come in. They're abused. They're, you know, internment
right.
camps, whatever. And then what is it that once a group of people becomes more mainstream or accepted by the society, that you end up having a part of that population, Michelle Malkin being a really good example of, that can turn around and actually back the same exact kind of policies that hurt their own relatives? And just because it's another group of people that are new. I mean, you know, it's shit. It started with the Irish. You know, I mean, you can go right back for years and see how this is just like a returning pattern. And I just, you know, what is it about that people will turn around and find it so easy to hate when they were once the hated?
And you know what? I mean, I heard this on Tom Hartman's show, too. You know, she was screaming about sending the anchor babies back, you know, to where they came from. She's an anchor baby.
Oh,
so I go, I'm on her, well, not on her website, but on Facebook. And I said, send the anchor babies back, because I'm on her. I hooked on as a fan, so every once in a while I'll post in her Facebook, send the anchor babies back, send the anchor babies back. But it's, I think what it is, and a lot of immigrants are like, especially Asians, because I'm Asian. You know, since they came through the steps and everything, since they did everything, you know, went through the process and everything, I don't know, whatever they needed to do, they're like, well, you know what, since I'm here, you should act this way, or, you know, like recent immigrants, you know, you got to act this way, you got to behave this way, this is the United States, blah, blah, blah. When when they first arrived here, they were treated like crap. So I think it's sort of like a rite of passage in a sense. That's what I'm thinking.
You might be right. You know, it's one of those things that saddens me. You know, you'd think, I've seen it here too with people in some office buildings where, you know, I heard stories about people making racist comments about Obama here in this country. And, like, these people were far from being white, and I just could not understand where the hell that came from. And, you know, and why? And, like, who does it serve? I don't think it serves bloody anybody. And I'm telling you, I was following along on the day of the Fort Hood shooting. I was swapping between the stream listening to Bob, and I had the local affiliate on. Right. And I'm just, you know, I could have, you know, if I wanted to be the so-called, you know, extreme leftist, I could have gone through all kinds of conjecture about soldiers shooting soldiers. But I refrained. One, because it's not something that I would do. And two, I knew that it was a moment to be really, really, really careful. Because nobody knows what the hell went down. It's tragic. This is the thing that needs to be remembered. It's horrible. And, you know, a community's in shock. There's innocent people right. dead. And, you know, you have obviously a guy who's very damaged. And
right.
why, you know, again, like I was saying to David, we have this great job about having a lot of conversations around an issue. But we never actually sit down and everybody sit around the elephant and point and go, okay, there's the elephant. Let's talk about that. And I think
exactly.
it continues to just set us, you know, it's one step forward, two steps back in so many ways. And I'm a frustrated guy. I know you're a frustrated guy with some way some things are moving forward or not. But I'm hoping that this moment here, I'm hoping that this ends up having a positive effect on Obama. In other words, it makes him step back and say, you know what, keeping this mess going is bad for the country. And no matter how...
You know, there's one thing I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, man.
I'm sorry, I broke your thought, but... You know, there's one thing I'm realizing, though. I mean, you know, I'm sure you heard it a lot with Mike. You know how he starts yelling into his microphone about something?
Yeah.
I caught myself doing that with everyone who was talking. I was like, what the fuck do you think you're talking about? I mean, a homegrown terrorist? Because you fucking asshole. He's pressured. Going back to Afghanistan, seeing people dying, and he's a goddamn psychiatrist. Who supports him? What the fuck's wrong with you? Dumb shit. I'm just going on and on and on. And people are like watching me. I don't care. I'm just going nuts. And then when I calm down, I'm like, uh-oh.
maybe that really
but
wasn't. Say again.
I go nuts. I go crazy for some stupid reason. Because people start eventually believing what he says or what Fox says or what Rush Limbaugh would say or whomever. We'll start believing that, oh, yeah, he's an Al-Qaeda member. That's what's going on. That's why he did what he did. It's because he went nuts. He finally broke down.
Yeah, yeah, you know, and you know, people using the excuse that he actually hadn't done a tour yet, that he couldn't have possibly been broken. Well, if this guy's been the bloody bouncing wall for other soldiers' horrific tales and the things that they've been going through, this guy would have to have a whole lot of shit to process. I mean, you know, I sometimes, you know, wonder about people who work in mental health care. Who the hell takes care of them? And maybe that's another discussion that we need to be having as a result of this.
is, you know, okay, we hire and train people to take care of our soldiers, but, you know, hey, look, maybe we need to have something to make sure that the healthcare professionals that are trying to keep our guys sane aren't falling apart under the stress themselves. Because that has to be an incredible burden to wear, especially in doctor confidentiality. You know, can you really go and talk about it with anyone?
That'll be a good talk for you to do. I mean, that's really important, because if we're going to start, I guess, I don't know if this is the right term, deflecting the responsibility of, like, mental health to, you know, terrorism, then we're just sweeping everything underneath the carpet, and more and more people are going to get sick, you know, and mentally ill, because I'm seeing a lot more. I'm seeing Iraq and Afghani vets in downtown L.A. on Skid Row, and they're just zoned out. I mean, they weren't really debriefed, you know, when they rotate back to the real world or into this world, and they're just, you know, ill, which is really sad. And I saw this one guy at school, because I'm going back to school, he had this, you know, 1,000-yard stare, and I talked to him and said, hey, how you doing? And he goes, oh, I got PTSD, and you could tell he has PTSD, then he quit school, and I said, oh, why are you quitting school for? He goes, there's no structure here. I want to go back to, you know, where structure was.
Yeah, tell me when to eat, tell me when to shit, tell me when to sleep. Yeah, we create, unfortunately, I think in the modern military, and I mean, like, this isn't trying to bash the soldiers at all. I think it's something that's done to them.
Uh-huh.
We do create a certain level of the automaton fighter. And, you know, I want a soldier with a conscience. Sorry. I really do. I want a soldier with a conscience. I want a soldier that can tell the difference between a right order and a wrong order. Even though that they need to follow orders, you need to have enough mental compass to know when to possibly stand down or to go ask for help. This has opened up such a can of worms, man. I could almost agree with Olbermann with one of his statements, however, not for the same reason. He made some statements to the effect that this was like the worst terrorist attack on American soil since 9/11. Well, that's totally over the top, not true. However, this is very possibly the worst thing that has happened to America internally for its soul since 9/11, because suddenly the damage is real inside the country. And again, we have to look at this from all sides and from the right direction, and not shout down those that try and use it as a political tool.
And what's going to happen when the soldiers are finally released out of their, you know, their duties and whatever after they serve their 2, 4, 6 years or 8 years in the military, and they're not, you know, trained to, or I guess deprogrammed from their kill, 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 you know, deprogrammed of that and sent back into society? What's going to happen with them? What's going to happen to us?
Yeah.
What do? Carry guns around to protect ourselves from these people?
And that's totally, you know, not the way we want things to be. And, you know, after the lesson that we learned after Vietnam, like, as far as treating soldiers, I mean, the left learned a huge lesson, you know. You can't let your fervor about trying to stop a war be focused against the soldiers who are, you know, dedicated, you know, doing it all for the right reasons, that it's our government and policy that we need to be fighting. We learned a huge lesson through that, but the lesson that we didn't learn is about caring for these people when they come back. And then with our fetish with prosecution, we're going to end up with guys with men and women coming back and having chemical dependence problems. If they don't bring them back, they're going to end up finding new ones.
Right.
And we're going to end up incarcerating these people instead of treating them, you know, because that's that fetish that we have in America of having to prosecute. And Bob that was talking about this earlier this week. And
right.
I don't see
a happy, you know, I just don't see how we can look at what went down at Fort Hood the way that it did and not have a moment for pause about what we're doing not only to the rest of the world, what we're doing in our name, but what we're doing to these people who want to put their lives on the line for us. And that just really, really shits me to tears.
Or sometimes there's, you know, they put their lives on the line because they have no choice, because I was listening to Hartman this week. And he said that there was a husband who lost everything, you know, insurance and everything. His insurance canceled him. And his wife would develop cancer. So what did he do? He joined the Army in order to get the benefits so that she could live.
Yeah. That's so wrong on so many levels, you know, and we don't even have time to even start getting into that. But I really, you know, I hope that everybody pulls back the rhetoric. I mean, really pull the shit back, because it's not going to end well. I don't want to see, you know, people with just names that sound funny to some people being suddenly, you know, put under undue scrutiny, being felt to be threatened when, you know, I mean, this particular soldier, I mean, 6 years of training and investment, you cannot tell me that this guy was like a cell operative to begin with. It's just, I'm sorry, that's just a joke. And a bad one.
They trained him well, didn't they?
Yeah, and you know, the next step is going to be bloody robotic fighters, so that, you know, we don't have to have the human factor on our side. And I think that there's something really wrong with that, because it's like, you know what, if you don't have to ante into the game, I don't think you should be allowed to play. That's my
opinion. John, can I just ask to Australia, please?
Sure. Oh yeah, well, man, you gotta find.
Can I just ask Australia?
Cool. You gotta find yourself a sponsor. I can't be it.
Oh.
or I tell you what, they actually are. They're looking for skilled migrants. So if you got some sort of skill, that's the way to get in.
Oh, cool. Oh, and the ELO said that they want to do a background check on the person who sponsors me. So.
Oh, and this is a tough place to get into, and it is. It's the hardest place to get into in the developed world, hands down. You know, it's getting not easier, but it's getting more humane as this government's been in, because Howard just wanted to make it like, nope, nah, ain't gonna do it, nah, no. I'm glad that we've evolved from that point of view. But Tim, I gotta run. We're about out of time. Man, it's good to talk to you. It's been a long time.
Thank you very much.
Not a problem, my friend. I'll play some Rush next week, I promise. But I think I'm gonna have to do Time Warp as the play out tonight.
Most definitely. Thank you very much.
All right, brother. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care, brother.
Thank you so much. And that was our good friend Tim from L.A., Mr. Rush. And thanks, everybody. Fantastic show from my end. Thanks to Cassie. Thanks to David. Thanks to Gene, as normal, my news ninja, my news producer, sending me stuff. Just the yeoman's work you do, my friend. It's great to have the phones back. So, I'm making the call now. I will cover Bob Kincaid's show Monday and Tuesday. So there will not be a rerun Monday. There will not be a rerun Tuesday. I will be covering Head On with Bob Kincaid from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. while he's on the road. We'll see about Wednesday. Maybe we can get Guy James to cover one. How cool would that be? But we'll have to see how that works out. So between now and then, thanks for being here. We're not going to do the normal play out this week. We're going to do something a little different, because I didn't get to play it before. As usual, thanks to
Ben Birch at the White Rose Society for the streaming and the archives. We couldn't do this without him. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch and Coal River Wind for their support of the organization. Thanks to Kid A for some of the music today. Thanks to Bob for some of the music today. Thanks to Scott Barry at B1 Louder Productions for some of the music, as always. And as we say here on Fox Up, be good, be green. We'll see you next week, and dance your ass off!
Just a jump to the left. With your hands on your hips.
Into the time slip,
and nothing can ever be the same.
You're spaced out on sensation,
like you're under the